Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Welfare Peer Technical Assistance Network, TANF, and FBCOs Working Together, an incubated coalition and an interagency intermediary conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Josh Good. Please go ahead.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us. We've had a chance to just launch a new web page on the Welfare Peer TA website, which we hope you've had an opportunity to look at or soon will. And we'd actually like to start today's call with our leaders at the Office of Family Assistance, those who are behind this project and a lot of the broader work that Welfare Peer TA does. And that means Lisa Washington Thomas, who is the Technical Assistance Branch Chief at OFA.
Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Welfare Peer TA Network. Today we'll be focusing on TANF and faith-based and community organizations working together. Today's webinar is a culmination of a multi-year project by the Office of Family Assistance, which is in the Administration for Children and Families at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The project's principal goal is to uncover promising practices and local collaborations between TANF programs and grassroots faith-based or community-based organizations in cities and localities throughout the country. As I hope that you know, last week we unveiled a new page on the Peer TA website, which we're extremely excited about. Located under the TANF initiative, on the button on the www.peerta.acf.hhs.gov is a new project webpage, which provides an overview of the TANF FBCO initiative. On that webpage is a 14-page analytical report summarizing lessons from partnerships throughout the country. Also, there's 8 case studies and a wide range of tools, which include sample MOUs, that can help support collaboration at the local level. Several of our presenters today will refer you back to that page, and we encourage you to make time to explore its resources. As most of you know, our country has tens of thousands of faith-based and community-based organizations, many of which serve TANF or TANF-eligible families and individuals. As you'll hear today, many of these groups have access to volunteers, as well as monetary and a wide range of other resources, including buildings located in the heart of low-income communities. We hope you enjoy today's webinar and provide us feedback if this was useful to you, and that you will make use of the project's webpage in the coming weeks. Thank you again for joining us, and we look forward to your active participation and your questions. Our project team lead, Josh Good, will now share a few more details about this project and introduce today's presenters.
So just building on Lisa's comments, you know, like all good work, this is a project with a history that is still going somewhere. The project began in 2007 with a broad effort to capture the work of 139 faith-based and community organizations around the country who had some partnership with a TANF Welfare Office or with a one-stop career center. So we compiled those organizations into a single compendium, looked at their partnerships and some of their strengths, and worked through a refined analysis to come up with a more select group that we then discussed at length with site directors over the course of several additional months. We compiled information on that more select group of 23 faith-based and community organizations that had living partnerships with public programs, had an opportunity to score some of their strengths, and eventually conducted a series of two-day site exchanges with a group of 8 programs throughout the country. Two of today's presenters are those faith-based and community organizations that have some strong relationship with their public partners in their community. The first of those presenters is Faith Connections, an innovative intermediary in Wilson County, North Carolina, that is connected to a Department of Social Services in Wilson County. The second of those presenters is an intermediary partnership between Henry Street Settlement House, and Seedco, a large intermediary based in New York City. So we'll look forward to hearing their insights and reflections about the nature of partnership, which is really what we want today to stress. As Lisa mentioned, there is a new web page, which we hope you'll take time to look at more carefully. We will, at the conclusion of today's webinar, be asking for your input around particular subject areas that are useful to helping to guide the future of our work. We are planning some meetings in the summer and fall, which our lead federal project officer, Mr. Al Fleming, will share a little bit more about later in today's call. So with that, we'd like to first introduce Mr. Glenn Osborne and Mrs. Becky Stottlemyer, who are based in Wilson County, who will guide us through a window into their innovative partnership in Wilson County between a variety of faith-based partners and the local Department of Social Services. Glenn Osborne directs Wilson County's Department of Social Services, a large organization of more than 250 individuals, and has been working closely with Becky for a number of years. Glenn, the floor is yours, sir.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank each of you for the opportunity to share some of the exciting ways partnerships have been formed through our Faith Connections program here in Wilson County. Faith Connections is a publicly funded intermediary that connects our churches, nonprofits, and individuals with our low-income families that are striving for self-sufficiency. We believe the partnership process of the Faith Connections program helps families maintain their dignity, and it helps them do so by helping them only share details of their need one time. When we work together in partnerships with the community, it makes a difference in the lives of the families in need and in the willingness of the community to provide resources. The Faith Connections program coordinator is a faith-based individual who knows and shares the faith process with our community partners. And I believe it's important for this faith-based program coordinator in Wilson County to be an employee of the Department of Social Services, because by being so, it enables our DSS case managers here to view the coordinator as a trusted colleague. It helps the coordinator develop, I think, a very broad knowledge of the various DSS programs, which is vital to helping fill some of the service gaps within the community. And it enables the coordinator to serve as a conduit, so to speak, for information sharing, which virtually eliminates duplication of services throughout our community. Faith Connections was originally formed in 1998 by the Wilson County Department of Social Services as a collaboration between the faith, government, and business communities here in our county. The initial model, which we called Families First and Pathways to Success, connected a family to a local church, and the goal of that effort was for that church to serve as a one-stop support system to assist the TANF Work First family as they transitioned off of welfare. Today, the faith-based program, as it's come to be called, has evolved into a program that forms strong partnerships, a network of partnerships, so to speak, with the various ministries and nonprofits and with certain individuals in our communities. While we no longer use the term families first, families still receive the support and the resources to move them towards self-sufficiency. But it's being done by many ministries to many families instead of one ministry to one family. At this time, Becky Stottlemyer will provide more details regarding the program.
Thank you so much, Glenn, for introducing the Faith Connection program and sharing both our mission and our vision. It's my privilege to be able to be both an employee of the Department of Social Services and the coordinator of a faith-based program. I'm going to share with you kind of how the process works and the details of how we are able to connect needs that are presented to the community, from the community, and how we connect those to our faith-based organizations. The assistance process is actually initiated when someone from the community presents a need to either a member of the faith community or to a Department of Social Services social worker. If there are not enough resources to meet that need available either through the funding of the ministry or the funding of our government organization, that's when the connection is made by either the faith community or the Department of Social Services social worker to the Faith Connections program. They will, at that point, actually contact the Faith Connection Program Coordinator, which is myself, and present the need of what the client has asked for or is in crisis because of. At that time, I can present to them an access resource that we have already placed in availability because of a prior agreement with our Faith Connections Network, which we call Partners in Ministry. The resource is offered either to the faith community or to the DSS TANF social worker to meet their client's need. The resource is either financial, service-oriented, and sometimes it's even a tangible donated item. Sometimes the resource may not be immediately available, as in the case of a service-oriented resource or a donated item. But at that time, the Faith Connections Coordinator will put out a resource request through the extensive listserv that we have with the goal of obtaining the resource within a 24 to 72-hour period, allowing the social worker or the faith partner to present the resource to the person in need within a very timely time frame. Faith Connections has tracked its history since fiscal year 2002-03. At that time, we had 208 of those connections that we made where a client's need was presented to the Faith Connection program. As of fiscal year 2009-10, we had made 1,807 of those connections. So in the seven-year charted history, there's been a growth of over 700% in referrals to the Faith Connection program. This growth is indicative of the magnification of funding that takes place as more people are served as a result of using the partnerships with our community. Our growth has also grown monetarily. Back in 2002, we received over $11,000 in donations from our faith community. At the end of fiscal year 2009-10, we had received over $37,000. We believe that this consistency in growth has come from our community donations because the Faith Connection partners welcome a consistent and safe process to validate the needs that are presented to them on a daily basis. This has been so successful for them that many ministries have chosen to limit or discontinue assisting what they refer to as walk-in assistance requests that the community presents to them. And instead, our community partners have chosen to fund the Faith Connection program with the intent of shifting monetary need requests directly to the Department of Social Services. What is done with that additional funding is, through the Faith Connection process, we leverage federal, state, and county assistance programs in order to meet the needs of the families and individuals that are being assisted at the Department of Social Services through our Faith Connections process. The monetary funding is significant. But it is just a portion of the benefits that we have derived from the community partnerships. We have families that are also assisted with what we like to call in-kind donations, such as donated appliances, furniture, gently used clothing, emergency food boxes that are given to the community through our food and nutrition team, and even pro bono services. The pro bono services may include home repair, dental work, and a lot of times counseling. At the end of the fiscal year, 09-10, we estimated the value of just that year's in-kind donations in excess of $187,000. Additionally, over the lifetime of our Faith Connections program, the community has donated 27 cars to us that have in turn been donated to our DSS TANF families for them to use for employment transportation. We'd like to highlight some of our what we think are beneficial outcomes of the partnerships that we have shared with the community and the government. As of March 10, we have over 70 churches and nonprofits that have chosen to join our network of partners in ministry. Our partners have become more aware of the programs and services that are offered both through our local Department of Social Services and also the other community ministries. As a result of some organizational assistance that sometimes the Faith Connections program is able to do for our faith partners, we have seen an increased growth in the ministries in our community. Their services have really been enhanced and filled in the gaps that otherwise were there before those partnerships. The growth has included a partnership with a local food pantry that is now the lead agency with an international hunger relief organization. Through that partnership alone, we have brought thousands of pounds of food into our community above and beyond what our local food bank is able to provide. While the increased growth of the faith community ministries may not at first seem to be a direct benefit for the associated government partners, the growth of those ministries has really provided an abundance of resources to our community, and therefore it lessens the amount of the government funding that is needed to meet our community needs. Just to share with you how our program funding started out, we had a building that was donated to a local community ministry from a local church. Then that building was subleased to the Department of Social Services. So our Faith Connections program is housed in that building. A CDB grant was obtained to renovate the building. For ongoing building maintenance, we are able to use TANF funding, and my coordinator's salary is paid from a combination of TANF funds and our county funding. What that has allowed us to do is 100% of all donations to the Faith Connection program are used for direct assistance to the clients and our families in our community here in Wilson County. One of the things that our partners have really appreciated is the control that they are able to maintain. Before Faith Connections was developed, if a family needed something that was not able to be met through our local funding at the DSS TANF funding level, many times staff at DSS had to send the family out into the community to see if they could obtain the rest of the funding needed before they could get their assistance met. As you can imagine, this could create an atmosphere ripe for either failure or duplication of services. Either the family was unable to obtain the additional funding in a timely manner in order to alleviate their crisis, or possibly they could obtain more funding that was even necessary to meet the original need. However, it's no longer necessary, and we do not send families into the community to ask churches and other agencies for that money. Instead, we obtain that money through the Faith Connection process directly. The autonomy of each community partner is respected, and various strengths of each partners are identified and then put to use to meet the needs that exist both in the faith community and in the lives of those that are presenting their needs to our local Department of Social Services. This structure has really enhanced the partner's ability to minister without feeling any discomfort of losing their identity in the community or losing their freedom to choose to minister as to how they feel best. What we have seen by giving our community partners a process to screen, validate, and distribute resources safely and timely is that the Faith Connection program has found an overwhelming willingness on the part of the community ministries to offer resources freely to the families in our community. We would just like to take a moment to summarize our program and the success that we have had in our faith and government partnerships by telling you about a young lady that has come through the Faith Connections process. We met this young lady after she had become a single mother of 9 children. She had been a stay-at-home mom homeschooling her children when she experienced the unexpected death of her husband. In order to keep her large family together, this young lady became part of the Work First program and received Work First TANF assistance for many years. She was shy, her self-esteem was low, and she had very little work experience. Her strengths, though, were that she was a beautiful person inside and out, and she had a desire to succeed. She participated in our office mentoring program for Work First participants and received on-the-job training in our offices that allowed her to be placed in a part-time receptionist position with our local county government offices. Well, they loved her, and she's now working full-time with benefits and no longer receiving WAFA benefits. This lady continues to thank us for connecting her to the resources that have been brought about through the faith and government partnerships of the Faith Connections program. She's a living example of how partnerships can really make a difference in our communities. This concludes our portion of the presentation, but we really want to thank you for taking time to learn more about the Faith Connections program at the Wilson County Department of Social Services. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky and Glenn, very much for that window into your work. We will now turn to a combination of Seedco and Henry Street, who will describe a different model in New York City. Francine Delgado is Seedco's Senior Vice President, has a long history with the organization, and will start us off. Francine, the floor is yours.
Thanks so much, Josh. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Francine Delgado. I am a Senior Vice President for New York City's Programs and National Technical Assistance at Seedco. And I am joined this afternoon with Jeannie Tung, who is the Director of Employment Services at Henry Street Settlement. Jeannie and I have been working together for about 7 or 8 years now in this collaboration that we are about to describe. So before I get into the meat of the presentation, just quickly want to give you an overview of the agenda. I'll give you a brief overview of Seedco, and Jeannie will talk a little bit about Henry Street Settlement. Then we'll talk about the intermediary model, specifically Seedco's approach, the background and the advantages and challenges of the model that we've developed and been refining over the last 14 years, and then some of the lessons that we've learned over that time frame. So first, let me just give you a little highlight of Seedco. So we were founded in 1987 with funding from the Ford Foundation. And for the first 10 years of our existence, we really focused on providing loans and technical assistance that was focused on affordable housing and helped historically black historically black colleges and universities. From 1998 to 2004, we began launching model programs and solidified a system of working with community-based organizations through an intermediary model. After September 11th, after those attacks, we helped lead a lot of the economic recovery efforts here in Lower Manhattan, and that really sort of fostered the growth of our approach to working with small businesses as well. In 2005, we launched an earned benefits branded tool which is a technology tool that connects individuals and families to a range of public and private benefits, and the focus is really on individuals who've been working in entry-level positions. The work really started with folks who had been transitioning out of our Work First program. And since 2005, we've had all of our supports to small businesses was spun off to into a community development financial institution, which was named Seedco Financial Services. And Seedco began to provide more intensive job development, job training to individuals in New York City and Memphis, Tennessee, and we continue to grow and expand our programs nationally. Just to give you a sense of how we do our work, we provide direct services, so we do that here in New York City via two of the country's largest one-stop centers, the Upper Manhattan Career Center and the Bronx Career Center. We also provide direct services to small businesses in the form of technical support. We also do lending through our subsidiary, Seedco Financial Services. And then we also run a large-scale welfare-to-work program in Memphis, Tennessee, where we are doing a lot of the direct service. In both cities and in other cities as well, we do more traditional intermediary services, again, through some of our TANF-funded programs. Here in New York City, we are implementing a large back-to-work program, which is the TANF program here in the city. You'll hear more about that. And we also have a very large national housing counseling network, which has about 100 community and faith-based organizations comprising that network. We also design and implement a lot of innovative programs on behalf of government and private foundations. And then a lot of the work that we do, we try to take all of our lessons learned, and we bring those to the policy field in the form of reports, operations reports, toolkits, and we do a lot of public testimony as well about our experiences. And then we have a consulting team that I also oversee that has about 300 clients strong. And an interesting tidbit around that is that most recently we've been doing a lot of work in the United Kingdom that's also implementing its own welfare reform and has a real interest in engaging faith and community-based organizations in the delivery of welfare-to-work services. And so with that, Jeannie is now going to give you a quick overview of Henry Street Settlement.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Jeannie Tung, the Director of Employment Services here at the Workforce Development Center of Henry Street Settlement. Henry Street Settlement is a 118-year-old multi-social services organization. It was originated as a settlement house with the purpose of caring for the poor on New York's Lower East Side. So the focus was greatly on health as well as the arts. Today, our services fall into four clusters, health and wellness, which includes mental health. We have an outpatient clinic, facilitated enrollment to health coverage, senior services, home care, and a single stop. Our next cluster is transitional and supportive housing. We run four shelters and get referrals through the Department of Homeless Services. The third cluster is in the arts, where there are performing and visual arts performances, arts and education, and also training. And then the last cluster we'll focus on a little bit more, workforce development and our youth programs, which includes daycare programs to after school, to summer camps and summer youth employment, to college prep and unsubsidized employment, which is what we do at the Workforce Development Center. So let me talk a little bit more about the workforce development piece. Even though our center here was established in 2001, there has been employment services throughout the agency over the years, but with additional funding, we were able to open a new site to integrate our workforce programs into a single delivery model. And right from the beginning, we partnered with Seedco, who is looking to expand its network of community-based organizations and partners. Today, we collaborate with over 20 21 funding sources, although CEPO is our largest funder and we have a staff of 25. Our primary goal is to connect our job seekers to employment, and the mission is to help people find their path to self-sufficiency. The Workforce Development Center is the only program of Henry Street that works with CEPO through the Back to Work program. And although we have Advance at Work program that we did with CEPO as well, and we do collaborate with CEPO's Workforce One Career Centers and have also been involved in Earned Benefits and other smaller programs. Let me just talk a little bit about the numbers. From 2008 to 2009, we had 589 job placements, including 290 TANF recipients, 441 retained at least 90 days, 359 retained at least 180 days, 964 TANF pre-employment case plans were submitted, and 2,082 referrals to other supportive services. So, and Francine, would you like to talk more about Back to Work, or?
Sure. So, the Back to Work program, as I mentioned, is actually a large employment initiative that targets cash assistance applicants and recipients here in New York City. CEPO operates the program via a contract with HRA, and we pass through the bulk of the resources on this contract to a network of community and faith-based organizations that we've been partnering with for a long period of time, of which Henry Street Settlement is one of the seven partners. Our focus is definitely to provide services to folks who are presently living in any in the lower income parts of Manhattan, which include East Harlem, West Harlem, Washington Heights, the Lower East Side, and the Chelsea area of Manhattan. And we also are providing services in some of the lower income areas of the Bronx as well. So just to give you a sense, in February of 2011, there were over 150,000 family assistance recipients in New York City, which included 67,000 families and about 112,000 or so children. And just as a point of reference, family assistance is the New York State branded term for TANF services here. HRA essentially runs what they call job centers, which are the eligibility offices, and caseworkers from the Human Resources Administration refer clients out to the Back to Work program that we operate. And so clients then get referred to us for services, and when I say us, I really mean Henry Street Settlement and our other partners, and they receive case management, job development, and job skills training, while CEPO really focuses more on providing the infrastructure support in the form of technology, performance measurement and management, on-the-ground technical assistance. We help translate a lot of the policy guidance into actual operations capacity, and you'll hear more about that in a minute. So I think just again, let me give you a little bit more of the background. So obviously the federal government first implemented Work First POP programming, and New York City was one of the first localities to take on performance-based contracts. So this was back in 1998. And we, working with three other community organizations who are still part of our network today, sought some funding from the Community Trust here, the New York Community Trust, which is our local foundation, to provide some seed funding for an initial initiative. And we developed the Neighborhood Strategies Initiative, And we applied for a federal DOL grant with those three groups. And as a result of the work that we achieved or accomplished under that program, we were awarded a Promising Practices Award from the state DOL. Soon after, HRA launched its first workforce RFP, and we ended up recruiting some additional partners, which included Henry Street. And collectively, Seedco plus nine of its partners took on a $3.5 million contract, which lasted for 3 years. 7 years later, we were still operating under a contract renewal, and we had overperformed on that contract, and it positioned us well to then compete for the newest iteration, which was the back-to-work contract, which was implemented right around the time of TANF reauthorization. And so this next graphic really just provides you a visual in terms of how sort of the flow of the funding as well as sort of the program activities works. And so at the top, the Human Resources Administration is essentially flowing their money in the form of funding and contract funding, as well as their policy guidance into CECO. We manage the relationship directly with the Human Resources Administration, and then all of the infrastructure support that I was referring to comes in the form of partnership management, program planning, quality assurance and monitoring, both prime contract and subcontract management, any additional resource development that we can do to supplement the very lean costs of the contract. We do a lot of customized staff training, ongoing ground-level management support and technical assistance to Jeannie and her counterparts at our other partners. A lot of product development, which comes in the form of tools like our assessment tools, our job readiness curricula, our technology system, our performance management reporting. And then a key component, and probably the most crucial component of our model, is a shared financial risk model, which I'll talk more about as well. And so then the role of Henry Street and our other partner community organizations is to really provide more of the actual direct services, so all the way from orientation all the way out through to retention. Jeannie and her staff and colleagues are essentially working with individuals to make sure that they are job ready, that they're accessing the skills that they need to be able to ensure that that person achieves or those folks consuming the services achieve greater sustainability. So I'm going to quickly refer to or talk you through some of the advantages that we think our model brings. So first and foremost is financial risk and resources. So our structure allows us to mitigate a lot of financial risk for some of the smaller FBCOs. The performance-based contracts that are being implemented here in the city, for instance, our contract alone requires that we manage or that we accept about 19,000 referrals per year and provide intensive services to everyone that we enroll in the program. And so all of that's done, though, on a performance-based contract. And so most of the community and faith organizations that we work with just don't have the financial wherewithal or the financial hunger to kind of take on that risk on their own. And so our model really allows for a portion of line item expenses to be covered on a regular month-to-month basis, and another portion of those expenses to be recovered in the form of a performance basis. And so there's a real advantage to partnering with Seedco on this program in addition to all of the other value adds. And one of those primary value adds being that we as a nonprofit are doing additional fundraising to supplement the costs associated with serving our participants. The second is really central infrastructure and resources. So we do all the data management analysis. We provide technical assistance and continuous performance analysis tools that we leave you with and that our partners are able to even implement across other programs. Everyone who works with us commits to a common program design as well as data transparency, and so we're able to really learn from each other. We improve our service and competitive advantage by really layering on the services of faith and community organizations. We have informed liaisonships to help manage those relationships with large funders. And we also have the additional capacity to compete for larger to compete against larger workforce agencies as a network, as opposed to each one doing it on their own. And then, of course, Seedco also takes on the lead in terms of partnership development. So we really work hard to create a space for knowledge sharing, best practices, and resource sharing, so that we can constantly work to improve our programs and so that folks can really learn from each other. And then the last place where we think there's a real advantage is that we think that together there's a lot of room to be a lot of work to be done that we take on in the form of advocacy. And so, you know, when we're presenting issues and challenges, we're a voice of 9 large community organizations, and we're able to really speak to the breadth of needs and challenges that are faced in our community. And again, we're representing at least 20,000, you know, 19 to 20,000 people a year, and their needs and the challenges that we see. But of course, wherever there are advantages, there are challenges. And so financial risk also brings its challenges. We're sharing half of the risk with our community-based partners in the sense that they get 50% of their line item expenses covered month to month on these contracts, but Seedco is still taking on 100% of the risk with the funder. And so it's our responsibility to find the resources up front to be able to pass through to the CBOs, which requires us to really balance our aggressive performance expectations with the various capacities of our community partners. I'm sure everyone who's running a TANF program is also facing administrative burdens, but with us, there's additional administrative burdens that, you know, can be really overwhelming for a lot of our facing community-based partners. And so we really take on a lot of that capacity for them as well, which means that we've got to have added capacity to do a lot of the timekeeping and managing documentation and quality assurance work, which is obviously cost and time-intensive for all of the parties involved. And then, of course, there are challenges with unity and diversity. You know, it's on us to reconcile differences across our partner organizations while respecting the unique and specialized approaches that each of them bring, but that can be difficult at times. And at the same time, we also need to balance implementing the common program model with the individuality of the community organizations. And so, as I mentioned earlier, everyone who partners with Seedco commits to a common program model and using common tools, but many of our partners are also trying to institute commonality and streamline practices across their organizations. And so that's often a struggle that we have to deal with and have to manage on a case-by-case basis. And then, of course, there's outside policies that can inflict limitations on our work. I think a lot of the local interpretations of timekeeping, for instance, on TANF programs creates a real challenge for us. And so Seedco really takes on the role on behalf of our partners to kind of work through solutions and develop solutions to kind of meet those. But it's an ongoing process and an ongoing challenge, especially when the policy environment or the guidance that we get from our funders is often in flux as well.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in and just add a specific example to the outside policies and how that can be a challenge. I had mentioned earlier that Henry Street Settlement runs 4 shelters. A lot of our shelter residents do have TANF cases, but because of the zoning restrictions on the contract, our shelter residents can't access our workforce services as direct referrals to our workforce, to our back-to-work contract. But turning that challenge into an advantage, we've actually, because of Seedco's advocacy, and we've been able to go to the Human Resources Administration and request some workarounds or try to advocate that the zoning restriction becomes removed. And with that, I will move on to some of the lessons learned through this intermediary model in partnership with Seedco. So first of all, insight to best practices. It's been really great to work with other CBOs and be able to visit their sites and learn how they do things when we have challenges or when we are not sure what the best practices may be. So while Henry Street has our own information about how we provide our services to our clients and how we've always done it, being part of Seacoast Network allows us to see how other partners do it and improve our own services and optimize our performance. In addition, we have increased access to resources, as Francine mentioned. Because we are smaller, sometimes we are not recognized or noticed by other partners. By being a part of this network and part of an alliance with Seedco, we have more access to other opportunities and larger contracts and larger agencies. And then also, as a partner with Seedco, we have access to more business partnerships. So working with some other for-profit businesses will allow us to focus on our performance and fiscal management and public relations while focusing on our client needs. We also get ongoing support from Seedco, the technical assistance that Francine mentioned earlier. Specifically, they generate smart stats or a lot of data and statistics to us to inform our performance. They also provide continuous performance improvement tools to us that have been really helpful to help manage the program and so that we can develop the best organizational habits and improve, again, our performance and provide additional resources and then ultimately the best delivery of services to our clients. Mitigating financial risk. Again, it allows Henry Street to apply for funding that might not otherwise be attainable by providing some upfront costs and also even though it might be a 100% performance-based contract, by mitigating the financial risk, it becomes less of a 100% performance-based contract for Henry Street. Last but not least, leveraging resources. So by being a part of a larger network with Seedco, we can leverage other resources and access more funding through the partnership. And I really want to thank everyone for this opportunity to share with you the advantages, challenges, and our lessons learned by this partnership, this intermediary model in serving our low-income individuals and families and connecting them to a path of self-sufficiency.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Jeannie and Francine. And with that, I would like to say one more brief word because we are looking forward to hearing from you. We'll first have a chance to hear from the project's federal project officer who has been guiding this work from its beginning. That's Mr. Al Fleming. But let me just say quickly that as you may see on your screen, there is a demonstration slide that allows you to submit a question, which we'll look forward to fielding from our presenters today and from our project staff at the Office of Family Assistance. In order to ask a question, you can either click on the portion of the menu bar that reads Q&A in order to open the pane, or you can open it and drag the pane off the menu bar to display it as a standalone box. To ask a question this afternoon, we request that you please type your question into the thin box here, which you may see, and click the Ask button, which will be circled. You can automatically receive a reply thanking you for your question and letting you know that your question has been forwarded to today's facilitator. And that automatic reply allows us to free up your Q&A pane, which then allows you, if you wish, to ask another question. So again, with that, we'll turn this over to Al Fleming, who is the Federal Project Officer at the Office of Family Assistance, who has been guiding this work forward from its beginning and will continue to be doing so as we move ahead. Al, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Josh, and to our presenters today for the continued work that you extend to low-income individuals. For the last 3 years, I've served as a Federal Project Officer and had an opportunity to visit a number of programs featured in the project literature, including Henry Street, CECO, and a number of others. Having just heard from our presenters today, I would like to share a few additional ways that you can become involved in supporting collaborations between faith and community-based organizations and TANF agencies or other federal initiatives in your community. Commencing this summer, we are planning a series of regional meetings designed to promote interagency collaboration and partnerships at the local level. Our goal is to draw from all of the project's learning to date and from the current research literature to expand the ways in which FPCOs partner with TANF agencies. We also anticipate partnering with state-led offices of faith-based and neighborhood partnerships, which exist in many of your states through your governor's office. Often these offices are aware of particular state-led coalitions and opportunities, and we are excited to have them at the table this coming year. Our first regional collaboration institute will take place in Kansas City late June, and we will be working closely with our regional leaders and state TANF directors to confirm local programs to invite to the one-day meetings. Since we are still developing the curricula for the in-depth training workshops, today we are asking for your feedback. At the conclusion of our webinar, we will be asking for your directed guidance around specific topics you and your colleagues find most useful in promoting collaboration and accomplishing our organization's goals. Again, thanks to our partners and our ICF team and for you joining us today for the ongoing work on behalf of low-income families and individuals in the community. And we look forward to taking your questions at this time. Josh?
So as you are submitting questions, let me just quickly refer you again to the Welfare Peer TA website. Now, we know everyone reads everything that comes through the Welfare Peer TA webpage. There was last Friday, a week ago, so about 10 days ago, there was a note that came through about today's call announcing that webpage. And as you may see there, under the TANF Initiatives button, there is a description of Henry Street's partnership with CEDCO and a description of Faith Connections work, as well as the analytical paper that Lisa Washington-Thomas mentioned earlier. So we'd certainly encourage you to have a look at those for additional information on today's presentation and the work behind it. So with that, we'll take your questions. And we'll do our best to field these real time. Sarah and Lynn, if you're seeing some as well, please feel free to help us receive these questions.
Sir Josh, we have a question asking, are there any current officially recognized TANF and FBCO partnerships in metropolitan Atlanta?
I will say that we did have an opportunity to visit a site called Future Foundation, which is a healthy relationships program for school-based students. That paper about Future Foundation's work, which sits just outside of Atlanta proper, is a site that Al Fleming had a chance to visit along with some of our team last year, is on the TANF Faith website, the webpage that Lisa described. So we'd invite you to look at that. We could certainly send you its direct link if you'd like to follow up. Really, just to name that, for any follow-up from today's call, if you're interested in a particular paper or for questions that aren't raised during today's discussion, you are welcome to email us. You can email the Peer TA listserv email address that was used to remind you of today's webinar. You may also email me directly at jgood@icfi.com. And we will be happy to answer your questions. Is there another question?
We have another question asking, when are the other regional meetings scheduled?
Good question. And we will be continuing to work with our partners. Our current thinking around that is to make them relatively small meetings that are tied into the state TANF director and a particular organization within his or her state, a particular faith-based or community-based organization that has a living partnership with its local TANF office. But we are still confirming those meeting dates. They will be tied to some of the regional meetings that will be happening beginning in late June, as Al referenced, and going through the fall. So we will look forward to following up once we get those dates firmed.
Our next question is it possible to get a copy of the presentation?
By all means. Today's conversation is being recorded, and it will be made available through the PeerTA website. And if anyone would like particular PowerPoints, a PDF version of those, we'll be happy to send you one. Sarah, any more questions?
We don't have any more questions in our queue right now.
Very good. So just to go ahead and reference it directly, as we referenced earlier, one of the things we're really hoping as a result of today's conversation is that you will help us know what topics really are most helpful in the organizations in which you're working and in the communities that you're serving. And so I might suggest, Sarah and Lynn, if we're able to go to this, that we go ahead and post the set of questions that solicits your input around some of those topics. Basically, we'd like to ask you two particular questions. One is whether particular topics around collaboration would be helpful to you and your organization. And the second is whether you'd be interested in receiving follow-up training or resources that can support collaboration between TANF agencies, grassroots community-based and faith-based organizations, and other public programs. And so those are our two main questions. I might suggest, if there isn't another question in the queue, that we go directly to that. And if you'll look on your main webinar pane, your main screen, we would like to run through a series of yes or no questions real time. This will take just 4 or 5 minutes. That asks for your input around some of the topics we have in mind for this Living Collaboration Institute one-day series of meetings that's coming up. The first question is, are you interested in developing your understanding of charitable choice? That's the provision in the welfare reform law from 1996. And government faith-based partnerships, yes or no? And just to name this, we have about 10 of these topics. And so if there are particular topics that are more appealing than others, we'd encourage you to clarify that by saying no if, in fact, you would not be interested in a particular topic area. We certainly hope they're all good topics, but we would appreciate your differentiating among them in that way. So our next question is a question about whether you'd be interested in additional resources concerning recruiting and managing volunteers. One of the featured topics in our 14-page analytical report describes the way in which volunteers are used at the local level, both by government-funded agencies and by FBCOs, faith-based, community-based organizations. Third topic area, would you be interested in additional resources around accessing volunteers through outside program partners like AmeriCorps and Learn and Serve programs? And our next topic area, our next subject matter concern that emerged in the analytical paper was around collaboration readiness factors. Again, we identify some in that paper, which we'd encourage you to download and have a look at, but particular reinforced teaching around report around collaboration readiness factors. A fifth topic area is organizational infrastructure, one of the core capacity building subject areas. Additional resources around strengthening your organization's infrastructure. A sixth subject area, which Faith Connections talked a little bit about today, and which the TANF welfare page describes with some downloadable resources that you can access there, is developing partnership agreements, MOUs, and a series of other partnership agreements to strengthen your work, your collaboration. Seventh area, are you interested in working with intermediaries? You can only assume after CEDCO's and Henry Street's presentation that that has particular appeal. But would you be interested in more support around how to access intermediaries, whether through foundations, through nonprofits, large nonprofits like CEDCO, or of the kind that Faith Connections described today as well? An eighth area, the benefits generally of TANF and faith-based partnerships. If you're interested in additional resources in that vein. A ninth subject area, would you be interested in community asset mapping resources? One of the topics described in our paper concerns the subject of place-based strategies. Would you be interested in community asset mapping tools, whether that would partner with case managers working at the front line or in other venues? And finally, would you be interested in developing collaboration action plans? Certainly, we hope there are clear takeaways from meetings that happen this summer and fall. Would it be helpful to have support around developing or implementing action plans? And then finally, would you be interested in receiving follow-up training or additional resources to support collaboration between TANF programs and grassroots community-based organizations? And let me just name here, too, that please, if there's particular response, particular reaction, particular thoughts that you have about local-level opportunities, please feel free to email us. We would love to hear from you, and we will follow up if there are ways that we can be supportive within the confines of our current direction from our friends at OFA.
Josh, we do have some additional questions. Do we have some time to answer those?
You bet.
We have a question. How do I know if my state or city has a faith-based initiative with a state TANF office?
Well, that's a good question, and it's part of the reason for this project. We certainly are looking forward this year to being in closer touch with some of the governor office-led faith-based and neighborhood partnerships offices. To our knowledge, there are about 26 or 27 of those around the country that are currently in operation. And so if you're from a state that does have one of those offices, we'd encourage you to follow up with them. I will say that you can get to a description of those current offices through the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. They have a list with some contact information that I know that they're trying to keep current of those 26, I believe, current faith-based offices throughout the country. So that's one avenue for learning. You're also welcome to reach out directly to us, and if we know of places, we will be happy to follow up. I will say that the compendium of organizations lists 139 partnerships that existed as of 2 years ago, and so that may also be a PDF downloadable copy that can help you find other places in your community or certainly in your state.
We have another question. Can any of the presenters speak about their experience, if they have any, with initiatives involving savings accounts for TANF recipients?
So this is Francine Delgado. I can speak to some of the work that we've done in this arena. One of the projects that we most recently implemented in partnership with the City of New York, was a conditional cash transfer program, which was pretty large scale and really focused on exploring and evaluating the effectiveness of financial incentives on eradicating or lifting people out of poverty. And so one of the, there were a whole host of about over 20 incentives that we tested in this evaluation. The evaluation is a five-year study, and so we don't have final results. We're actually only in the third year of the project. But one of the incentives that we looked at was definite, or one of the things that we looked at was opening cash savings accounts for folks who were actually recipients of these cash incentives. And we worked very closely with the city's Office of Financial Empowerment to design a specialized savings account, and also to work with our state Department of Social Services to be able to recognize those savings and not have them negatively impact the folks who would still be on, in receipt of TANF assistance. And it'll be interesting to see. Again, we're only in the third year of the evaluation, but what we can say offhand is that almost everyone who had access to a free checking and all of the financial literacy services that we provided in conjunction with the free checking accounts actually put money into their accounts. And after 18 months of initiating the project, the average savings account had about $350 in it. And so people were definitely saving money, and it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that fifth-year evaluation. Another area where we've had some experience, and this is something that we did in the past, but we are no longer involved in, really because the cost of administering the program had such a high burden, we did operate an individualized development account, IDA program, several years back. And again, folks who were saving in the program, our program is targeted to folks who had transitioned out of our workforce program, and the IDAs were offered as part of our suite of retention services. And again, we had pretty high uptake in terms of people opening accounts and a decent enough experience in terms of people actually putting money to the side and saving. Of course, what was nice about those savings accounts is that they were matched dollar for dollar, and so there was a real return on the savings as well for any of the participants who participated. But I think a real challenge for us has been in this particular funding environment, administering the program and then also finding the matched savings has been a significant challenge for us, and so we're no longer operating that program.
This is Jeannie Tung at Henry Street Settlement, helping people who are working access checking accounts is part of our job retention services, which also includes budgeting and like direct deposit, and we are also a volunteer income tax assistance site, so we do help individuals file their tax returns, given certain requirements. Unfortunately, we don't have the resources to track a lot of this information, especially with related to opening bank accounts, but it is a part of our menu of retention services.
This is Glenn Osborne in Wilson County, and we have administered and still administer several of the initiatives that were just presented and discussed. We're continuing to provide the individual development accounts for home ownership, for education, and we've had about 10 participants in our county that have actually gone forward and been able to save to make a down payment on a home and become a homeowner, which is a great experience for them. And Also, we really emphasize in our TANF Workforce Program being banked and being banked of having a checking and a savings account. And we have here at Wilson County DSS, our state's first financial social worker that's certified in professionally as a financial social worker, and she provides just a whole range of financial consultation and problem solving to not only our current TANF participants, but those who've exited the program and continue to need some counseling and some advice and some consultation on their road to self-sufficiency. So we've had some good success with helping our participants get banked, and it really is it's another one of those educational, you know, kind of individual growth opportunities for people as they become more self-sufficient. So it's worked well for us. We've had a number of participants who've come to us and they were not banked, had never been banked in their life, and being able to kind of get them established makes a difference in terms of them being able to manage their financial affairs. So it's an important endeavor, and we've had some good success in that area.
Wonderful. Thank you, Glenn. Would our colleagues at OFA care to add to that at all as well? I know we've talked about the value of, you know, bank on initiatives. Some of you may be familiar with Assets for Independence and its resources in this area.
Hi, Josh. Yes, we have, in the past, we have worked with the IRS in providing earned income tax credit and financial literacy workshops to localities who are interested in broadening their estate coalitions. In those workshops, we do talk about being banked, helping clients become affiliated with the banking system, as well as saving and other financial literacy issues. And if anyone is interested in a similar type of workshop, they can go to the Peer TA website and request TA. That's www.peerta.acf.hhs.gov. Thanks.
Wonderful. Any additional questions, Sarah and Lynn? Well, if not, let us then again express our thanks to you for taking time out of your day to join us this afternoon. We look forward to following up. We hope that you'll make good use of the website that Lisa just mentioned. In addition to, you know, support in that particular area, our project webpage has a variety of resources that we'll continue to add to as the year ahead unfolds, and we hope that you will find it to be useful. There are a list of particular tools under the toolkit under the third tab of the project's webpage that may be particularly useful, and we really would like to thank our presenters today, Glenn and Becky and Francine and Jeannie, for your time. Thanks to our colleagues at OFA for enabling this call, Al and Lisa, and we look forward to perhaps doing it again down the line later this year. Any closing remarks from our colleagues, our senior colleagues at OFA or today's presenters?
Yes, Josh, thanks to all of our presenters and those joining the call today. Thank you.
Thanks for your time, everyone. Have a great day.
This does conclude today's webinar. Thank you for your participation. Okay.